Hello and welcome to the Cuddly Caveman Hour. I am your host, Jason Harvey, and that was Return to the Black Star by the Deep Space Destructors. And today, I got a little quote from Marcus Aurelius that I wanted to talk to you guys about, and it's a conversation that I've had for, a few times now with my wife, and it's the idea of promoting goodness in our lives, and this is something that I feel is pretty significant, and I just wanted to share my thoughts with you guys about that. So the quote is from Marcus Aurelius, on page 30 of his book, Meditations. For anything that might lead you astray, tempt you off the road, and leave you unable to devote yourself completely to achieving the goodness that is uniquely yours, it would be wrong for anything to stand between you and attaining goodness as a rational being and a citizen. And, you know, I took some time over the weekend to ponder what it means to be a good human being. And I mean, I try to live my life by two very simple principles. And the first principle is don't hurt anybody. And the second is, don't take from people, right? Don't take what isn't yours. And I mean, there's other principles that I live my life by as well, but I think those two are pretty important to be a good citizen, to interact within the world. And I think about, you know, what is at the core of the human experience. And I think it's probably going to be the family first and foremost. And I mean, there's no way that we could legislate, pass laws, create a movement that could create a good person. A good person is created through family. And I have to, well, during this weekend, I was thinking about what makes an individual strive for better. Because sometimes, well, a lot of the times, our families aren't the best, right? I mean, just looking back at my own family history, you know, I hope you guys don't mind, but I'm going to share this with you. You know, my great-grandfather was a terrible drunk, and he would get violent and beat up my great-grandmother. And I have to think that this probably affected my grandmother. She was just a little girl around this time. And so my great-grandmother divorced him. And my great-grandfather had a brother that, I guess, decided to marry my great-grandmother. Papa Aubrey. And so my grandmother, she fell in love with my grandfather, and they had my mother, and their relationship wasn't the best from what it sounds like. There was still abuse going on, and my grandmother decided to one night commit suicide by taking a bunch of pills. And she left my mother, who was 4 at the time, without a mother. And I have to wonder, you know, what kind of a person does that to their child? You know, a 4-year-old child at that. And so there's this cycle of suffering and abuse that just kept going on and on and on. And same thing on my father's side. He was abused by his father, and I have to assume that before him, his father was abused, my grandfather. And my mother decided that wasn't going to be my life. And she left my father and raised me on her own. So there's this, you know, trying to continue that wave of wanting to do better, of wanting to rise above all the suffering and the abuse. So I think, you know, suffering is probably the main factor that leads people away from, or that leads people to want to do better. And you know, I've been over the last year or so, I've been doing a bunch of family research on none other than Ancestry.com, and about, I would say, going back about 20 generations, I found one of my first ancestors that landed on the new world, and I found this excerpt little family history from I think it was the Sprague Journal of Maine History. Duncan Stewart was born in the Highlands of Scotland about 1623. He espoused the cause of his kinsman, King Charles II. King Charles II was from the House of Stuarts of Scotland. And in supporting him, either at the Battle of Dunbar in 1650 or in 1651, he was captured by the army of Oliver Cromwell, and with the other prisoners taken in those battles, sent to the American colonies, and were sold as indentured servants to the colonists. Duncan landed at Ipswich, Massachusetts. And I gotta think, man, what was going through my ancestor's mind at that time? You know, fighting for a political revolution of sorts, trying to reinstate the King of England, because at that time, England did not have a king. They were ruled by Oliver Cromwell, who kind of became a self-made dictator at that time, which, you know, you look back in time and see the cause and effect of these different situations. Oliver Cromwell only rose to power because King Charles I was implementing heavy taxes on his English subjects. And so Oliver Cromwell rose up to oppose him and fought a war, and they executed King Charles I by beheading. And then Charles II escaped and then made his way back, and Scotland installed him as their king. And then Charles II went to war against Oliver Cromwell, and my ancestor was caught up in that fervor, I guess, to be sold as an indentured servant, and to, I don't know what Duncan's life was like back then. Maybe he had a sweetheart in Scotland. Maybe he was really close with his family, only to be stuffed on a ship and sent overseas to land in a new land, and all of a sudden you're having to work for some guy. It's said that he worked as a shipwright, so he was building ships in Massachusetts. So pretty hard labor. But he went on to marry somebody in the New World and had many, many kids, and eventually worked off his indentured servitude. He worked for whoever for about 7 years, and then I guess he bought a really big plot of land, or had some land awarded to him. And I have to say, I'm pretty inspired by his story, because he was handed pretty much with a shitty situation, and he made something out of it at the end of his life. So, going back to what makes an individual strive for better, I think the second concept would have to be meaning. I think back to when Jessica, my daughter, was born, and only when I became a father did I feel this true sense of purpose. I felt like for most of my adult life I felt rather aimless. Just show up to work my job, then go home, clock out, watch TV. It wasn't really, I don't know, I felt rather aimless, for lack of a better word. And then when I met my wife and we had our kid, it felt like I actually know what I'm supposed to be doing. Or, yeah, I think that's probably it. There was a part of my brain that felt like this is right. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know how to explain it, like a little mental switch was flipped on. And so when that mental flip switched, I was driven to create a new way for my kids. Was doing some math not too long ago, or over the weekend, and I drew out this little diagram, and the diagram has me and my wife, and then our two kids. Well, Dakota's going to be born in the next couple of weeks, maybe next week. Getting pretty excited. Anyway, I was thinking, I just kind of drew out these little stick figures. If Jess has two kids, and Dakota has two kids, and then their kids go on to have two kids each, kind of keeping it conservative. By the time we roll around to the 16th generation of descendants, we come up with a number, 131,772 individuals. 100,031 people. Sorry, I messed up that number. 131,000 people are my descendants. That's a staggering number to think about. Just the untold amount of people that I have a chance to affect in the future. So the wanting to do better, the striving for greater meaning, greater purpose, hopefully I see this as like starting off with a wave of positivity that was started by my mother. And I want to carry that wave of positivity so that it radiates down or radiates out to the future. I mean, hopefully if everything stays its course and humanity can continue on in the future. And who knows? I mean, those kids might have even more kids than just two. So I want to do better for the generations that lay in front of me. And I'm quite taken with Star Wars. And I was thinking about that scene where Luke Skywalker faces the Emperor. And I wanted to play it for you guys. So let me cue up the audio and I'll play it for you. Here we go.
Good. Your heat has made you powerful. Now, fulfill your destiny and take your father's place at my side.
Never turn to the dark side. You failed, Your Highness. I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
So be it, Jedi.
So, yeah, I really like that scene. Because, I mean, he's going up against impossible odds, fighting against his father and facing against the Emperor. And I was thinking, you know, the Jedi, Yoda and Obi-Wan, they were telling Luke, you know, you're going to have to kill your father. It's pretty much the only way. And they were so set in their ideas of destroying the Sith that they didn't see that there was another way. And I think Luke Skywalker, he couldn't necessarily kill his father. I mean, who really could do that? I mean, even though he was a bad guy, he did still feel that perhaps there was a chance that he could reach some measure of goodness within Anakin. And so Luke decided to go a different way. And instead of trying to kill his father, maybe he thought, why don't I forgive and love my father? And I think that's probably one of the most powerful moments in the original trilogy. And, you know, the whole motif of forgiveness and absolving your father for the sins that they committed. I think I've gotten to a place in my life where I'm no longer angry about my father, and I'm no longer angry about just the general family history, because I want to do better, and I want better for my kids. And the only way that they can have a better future is if I do better. So, going back to my notes. What makes an individual strive for better? I think it's those two things. It's the suffering component and finding meaning. So I had this thought, how do I inspire goodness in my children? And mostly I think it's going to be just living by example, showing them through my actions that there is a certain way to live. And I wrote down a bunch of words. I was doing a little brainstorm exercise. Just all the different qualities that I'd like for them to have, you know, to be able to listen, to speak truth and to live truth. Empathy, leadership, strength, love, trust, perseverance, discernment, community, being actionable or decisive, I guess, going on to have their own family, patience, and long-term gratification, being able to put off the short-term desires, I guess, for long-term goals. So, and I mean, in truth, those things will play out over time, which, you know, going back to my first discussion, you know, I can talk to them till they're blue in the face, Dakota and Jessica. But, you know, ultimately, it's the lived experiences that they'll have in the future that's really going to carry what I say and the lessons that I've passed on to them, that will they'll be able to obtain their own wisdom from that. And I think part of being a father is knowing when to step back to let them learn. And I think that's going to be hard for me. I mean, it's already hard. I see, you know, Jessica playing on playground equipment, and I have this inner kind of gut-wrenching reactions when she's being a bit too brave. It was cute. A couple of weeks ago, we went to the playground in Pine Top, and she was trying to get me to help her slide down the slide by holding her hand, and I just stood at the bottom of the slide, and I just kept saying, "You can do it. You can do it." Like, I just kept trying to encourage her to slide down on her own. And eventually she just let go and she slid down, and it was just the cutest thing ever to see the smile on her face. So, and then part of it is also knowing when to step in when that emotional support is needed, which I don't know, I guess seems like good parenting. You know, you let your kids try and fail and succeed, and then you're there when, you know, they fall down, hurt themselves, kiss their boo-boos, give them a hug. Or when they succeed, you give them a high five and a hug and give them praise. So, I think I have this diagram written down. You know, decent, rational sons and daughters go on to create decent and rational citizens within the world. So if I do my best to create a decent and rational family, then they'll go out into the world to go on to have their own families that are ruled by rationality and decency. And from that one, from the one small little drop of rationality and decency, hopefully that radiates out into the world. That's the hope. I don't think we can create a good, decent world by erecting laws or promoting programs or anything like that. It really does. I think I'm convinced that it starts off in the home. I mean, I haven't told you guys, you know, if you don't know me personally, I do have a day job. I work on a Native reservation. I teach STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, in a school. I'm not employed by the school. I'm employed by a behavioral health organization. And they contract our STEM services to the school. So I teach, and I do these little, like, we're using this curriculum now called dialectical behavioral therapy, and it's got this kind of Buddhist flair to it that I really like. It focuses a lot on meditation, and so going back to the kids that I serve, these kids, some of them come from really, it's just heartbreaking when you hear about their stories. And when you hear their stories, I mean, they, you know, no wonder why they're so mad and angry and they're acting out in class. And, you know, these kids are not the favorite of their classroom. And I'm thinking of this one kid in particular. I mean, when he came into our program, it was like, geez, I mean, he was just so wild. And now that, you know, this kid has been in our program for a while now, I see the change. And it's just so beautiful to see the change in this just this one kid. I mean, I've taught hundreds of kids over the last 5 years. I think it's been four or five years now. Just to see this kid make such a positive change in their life, it makes me feel like I'm actually doing my job. Sometimes I get down on myself because some of these kids come from pretty rough backgrounds and they stay in that pattern of behavior. So sometimes it feels like these lessons that I'm providing, you know, all the talks, all the times that I hang out with them, feels like it's not amounting to anything. Sometimes that's what I feel like I'm not changing anything here. But the hope is that one day when they go on to become an adult, I don't know, maybe hopefully they're able to think back on those times and say, oh, that's what Mr. Harvey was talking about. Okay. Yeah. Now I can try a different way. I don't know. It's a good, I feel like for the first time in my life, I'm in a position where I can not only promote good in my own private life by having a family, by having kids, but for the last 5 years, I finally feel like I'm in a position to where I can also push these kids towards a better way, towards goodness. And before that, I was stuck in a, well, I mean, I was making sandwiches for a living. And while I enjoyed the crew that I worked with, I didn't feel like my skills were really being used for much. Got to hang out with my friends. Got to hang out with some really cool coworkers who went on to become my best friends. But I didn't feel like I was bringing about positive change. Positive change just making sandwiches. So once one of the guys came up to me from this organization and asked if I wanted to apply, I thought, yeah, I think this is it. I think this is the opportunity that I was looking for. And I just grabbed onto it with both hands. Try to do my best to promote goodness. So if I could just go back to the quote, for anything that might lead you astray, tempt you off the road, and leave you unable to devote yourself completely to achieving the goodness that is uniquely yours. Marcus Aurelius is trying to tell us to avoid all those little distractions. And in our modern culture, that's really hard. Because what do we got? We got movies, we got cell phones, apps, got Burger King, McDonald's. We can just lay in bed all day, especially with this pandemic, these lockdowns that are happening. I mean, it's so easy to be complacent. I know it. I felt it. And I don't like it. Yesterday I was practicing doing some jiu-jitsu drills yesterday and it felt good. But it didn't feel like, you know, like when I'm actually at jiu-jitsu. I've been off for a while now. So to not be led astray, to, I guess, strive for the goal that we have. And I think probably having a family and, you know, some people are probably going to get angry with me for saying this, but I think having a family is probably one of the most basic goals that you could possibly have for yourself. you know, I had this goal of early on in my life of being a movie director. There's only one Steven Spielberg, you know, and once I got out into the real world, I felt that that goal was unattainable. So I was just making motions throughout my life, and it just didn't feel like, I felt, you know, looking back now, I think I was just falling into the trap that pop culture, media, our society was, you know, tells a majority of the youth, you know, go out there, become a star, become a this or a that. And I think I fell into that trap. And now, as a middle-aged guy, I don't know, I was 30 middle-aged, as a, I don't know, a 30-some-odd-year-old, I feel like I'm out of that trap now. And I want to try to do my best to inspire my students, my kids, to not fall for that trap, not fall into that trap that modern culture tells us to fall into. So having a family and supporting a family is one of the most basic goals that we could have. In the second part of the quote, it would be wrong for anything to stand between you and attaining goodness as a rational being and a citizen. So, to abstain from those wrong things, it's hard. Just bought a quart of ice cream last night. I haven't eaten any of it, I swear. So, abstaining, knowing when to engage with that stuff, with you know, being indulgent, and when not to, to hold yourself to a higher standard, hold myself to a higher standard. I mean, that's the fine line that I find myself walking, and that's the fine line that I think Marcus Aurelius is, I guess, more or less leading us to try to walk. So anyway, I think that's going to be enough out of me. Should probably change this podcast to the Cuddly Caveman 30-minute segment. So anyway, I'm quite taken in with Marcus Aurelius and his writings. I don't know how much of this I want to do for this show, because I mean, there's a lot. There's like 11 or 12 books. Could switch it up. Maybe next week do Epictetus, or maybe do Seneca. So yeah. Another major announcement, I've switched this podcast over to a different platform, anchor.fm/cuddlycaveman or cuddlycavemen. We're using plurality in our title. So you can find the podcast over there, and you can also leave a voicemail on the website. I'll get that and possibly play it on the next episode if I get any. And we'll have like a little user-generated segment of the podcast. So yeah, if you'd like, feel free to leave a voicemail review instead of a written one. But also, if you're listening to this on iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, please leave a starred review 5-star, 1-star, I don't really care. And just write up a little something that would be helpful. And you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google. There's a few others that I'm just kind of drawing a blank on. And yeah, I think that's about it from me. I love you guys. And you know what? What I'm hoping to do with this podcast is hopefully do it twice a week. I don't know. Dakota's going to be born in a couple of weeks, actually. I think probably next week. So, yeah, I'll try to hit 2 episodes a week after that. But next week, I will see you guys with some new content. Thank you very much. Love ya. I'm getting out of here. Bye.